This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Muslims are at our best when we prize scholarship and learning, and at our worst when a minority follow a misinterpretation of the faith down roads that lead to intolerance and extremism. The mainstream tradition of learning and enlightenment of Islam was never better exemplified than by the Islamic Golden Age, the historical period between the mid-8th century and the Mongol conquest of Baghdad in 1258. The direction of Islamic civilization during this period was not forged in the fires of war, but rather in the libraries of wisdom, which sought to advance human understanding gained from the ancient civilizations from the Greeks to the Persians. During this period, the Arab world became an intellectual center for science, for philosophy, for medicine and education. The period thus established a precedent not only for scholarship, but for fruitful cooperation between Muslims and other faiths. This period of Islamic enlightenment also included a flourishing of learning in Al-Andalus, Islamic Spain, where faiths lived side by side. At the heart of the Islamic Golden Age lay the faith of Islam, and in particular the central figure of the Islamic faith, the Prophet Muhammad. The two key sources of religion and ethics for Muslims are derived from the Book of Revelation, the Quran, and from the life and traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, known as the Hadith. The Quran provides a broad moral framework as a continuation of the Abrahamic tradition, but it is the sayings and actions of the Prophet, the Hadith, which teach a Muslim how to apply those values and ethics of Islam to everyday practical life. Based on that, it is easy to understand why prophetic traditions and ensuring their accuracy are vitally important to the faith of Islam. The figure of inspiration of the Islamic Golden Age that I want to talk about today is perhaps the most prominent scholar of that period, Muhammad ibn Ismail al-Bukhari, simply known as Imam Bukhari. For Muslims worldwide, his name is synonymous with the collation of the most authoritative collection of hadith of the Prophet Muhammad. His definitive book, the Sahih Bukhari, brings together over 7,000 painstakingly sourced and cross-referenced direct sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, which even today inform decisions for ordinary Muslims. For a man who dedicated his life to the Arab prophet Muhammad, surprisingly, the story of Imam Bukhari does not begin in the sand dunes of Arabia where the prophet Muhammad lived his life, but rather in the plains of Central Asia. Perhaps it is a fitting tribute to the universalism of Islam and the Prophet Muhammad, which transcends borders and races, that Islamic scholars born thousands of miles away from the holy sites in Arabia have defined the faith of Islam. Imam Bukhari was born in the city of Bukhara in the beginning of the 9th century, in what is now modern-day Uzbekistan. The twin cities of Bukhara and Samarkand lay at the heart of the Silk Route, the crossroads of global trade and flourishing centres of knowledge and civilization. Bukhara was not only the birthplace of Imam Bukhari, but also gave the Muslim world Ibn Sina, more widely known as Avicenna in the West, the pioneering scientist whose work revolutionized medicine as we know it today. Imam Bukhari's own upbringing was rather modest. He had been born into a family who had converted to Islam only two generations previously. Much like the Prophet Muhammad himself, Bukhari faced turmoil in his early life after the loss of his father. And given the nature of patriarchy in much of the world in that period, life could not have been easy for Imam Bukhari and his family. This seemed to have had a lasting impact on the adolescent Bukhari, who threw himself into excelling at every area of his studies. His early childhood also seems to have impacted on his later work, which emphasizes social justice and the idea of community as taught by the Prophet. But the defining moment in Buhari's life seems to have been when at the age of 16, Buhari made the pilgrimage with his family to Islam's sacred sites of Mecca and Medina in what is modern-day Saudi Arabia. The journey to Arabia would have been momentous, with the young Buhari having to face the challenges of covering thousands of miles across continents and would have taken years to complete. For Buhari, this first step would ingrain him with a wanderlust which began a series of journeys lasting over 16 years. These would take the young scholar from the souks and bazaars of Cairo to the ancient cities of Damascus and Baghdad. These journeys would have been voyages of discovery for a young man seeking his place in the world and visiting the holy sites where the Prophet Muhammad preached his message 150 years previously. Buhari was deeply impacted by the persona of the Arab prophet, and the rest of his life would be dedicated to ensuring that the true values and teachings of Islam, those of compassion, coexistence, equality and social justice, would be transmitted through the lens of the words and actions of the prophet himself. The task that Buhari set himself was Herculean in nature. He would travel to the furthest corners of the Muslim world to cross-reference and collate all the authentic prophetic traditions. It is said that Buhari consulted over 1,000 Islamic scholars, met thousands of others who claimed to have authentic sayings of the Prophet. In the process, Buhari learned over 600,000 individual prophetic traditions, an awe-inspiring achievement. But it is a testimony to the rigour of Buhari's intellectual exercise that his magnus opus, the Sahih Buhari, only contains 7,275 hadiths that he considered to be authentically the actual words of the Prophet Muhammad. For me, the wisdom and thought set out by Imam Buhari in his works, books that were in our home as children, that we were brought up on, provides a source of strength and conviction for my own personal faith. These lessons of tolerance and moral courage provide a focus in my everyday life. I'm fortunate enough to have visited Buhari's final resting place in Samarkand and to have reflected on the legacy of Imam Buhari, the values encompassed in his works, and those that I believe hold particular relevance for our modern society. The first lesson I take from the legacy of Imam Buhari is his meticulous scrutiny in ascertaining the authenticity of knowledge and information. Knowledge to him was not a matter of blind faith. He was not afraid to subject sacred prophetic traditions to the impartial and rigorous methodology of academic scrutiny. He had to be sure that the Prophet actually uttered those statements and actually did what others claimed he had done. The second lesson I take from Imam Buhari is that he led by example and made himself felt by the community. Society needed more than just his brilliant memory or his literary talent, having authored his first book at the age of 18. They also witnessed Buhari positively contributing to the betterment of his society. You would not just have found Buhari in the libraries of wisdom, but you would also see him lifting bricks to help build a resting place for travellers. Faith-driven civic engagement was his model. And he records in one of his works that the Prophet Muhammad said that the one who engages with people and society and faces difficulties as a result of this is better than the person who isolates himself from society and does not endure any hardship. Imam Buhari was a man of dignity who had a sensitive soul. He was determined to build his own destiny. Community cohesion, societal solidarity, and conflict resolution is also at the heart of his legacy and the hadith he compiled. Imam Buhari records in another of his important works, Al-Adab al-Mufrad, that the Prophet Muhammad said to his companions, "Shall I tell you of a status better than fasting, praying and charity? It is improving the state of friendship between people." This Ramadan, I was delighted to be part of the Big Iftar initiative, in which so many mosques, Muslim organisations, community groups and families open their doors and dinner tables to their non-Muslim neighbours. Another lesson from Imam Bukhari is the hadith stressing the importance of being kind to neighbours, to the elderly and to children. He quotes traditions such as, "A man is not a believer who fills his stomach while his neighbour is hungry," and goes on to say that anyone who does not respect our elders and have compassion for our children is not one of us. Today, I often turn to my own father for guidance and advice. And there is an important lesson here for how we should treat the elderly in a society where tragically loneliness blights so many older lives. Another value today much misunderstood about Islam is gender equality. Imam Bukhari saw this as one of the most revolutionary teachings of the Quran and the Prophet. In Al-Adab al-Mufrid, he writes, "He who praises God when a child is born sound and healthy and does not mind whether it is a boy or a girl." And this at a time when a female child was still seen as a curse. But even today we can learn much from these teachings of gender equality, where damaging interpretations and ignorant attitudes and practices still see many Muslim women being left behind. And even in places of worship, there's much more to be done. Worship as an expression of individual spirituality and one's personal relationship with God is often equated within the Muslim community, and especially in the mosque, with the religious obligations of individual men to the exclusion of women. The attendance of women in mosques is restricted, not only by inequality of access, but also by entrenched attitudes and practices that reinforce discrimination and exclusion. And this goes against the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, as recorded by Imam Bukhari in many of his works. In one of the final chapters of his book Al-Adab al-Mufrid, Imam Bukhari entitles a section, "Let Not Your Enmity Destroy Anyone," in which he records the Islamic teaching of not letting malice, resentment and enmity reach the level of desiring the elimination of your enemy. He takes his evidence from a saying of Umar, the second caliph of Islam, who said, "Let not your friendships go to the limits of madness, nor your hatred go to the limits of destruction." This lesson has never been more relevant than it is today. The fact that the tragic murder of drummer Rigby on the streets of London did not lead to an escalating pattern of retaliation is a great tribute to the good sense and moderation of all people, who were not prepared to let the actions of a handful damage relationships between neighbours. It showed that the overwhelming majority of citizens in the UK treat people fairly regardless of their background or faith. And it is these people whose tolerance and respect for others echoes the message of Imam Bukhari, not the misguided individuals determined to create division and distrust within communities. Imam Bukhari has his equivalents in other faiths, from Sikh gurus to St. Augustine, the Christian theologian who codified religious doctrine and set out the principles of a good Christian life in the 4th and 5th centuries. They are all channels of truth from the founders of the different faiths to the modern world, which are as relevant today as they were then.